Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hello everyone, this is Luke and welcome to my podcast for learners of English. I just want to remind you of my premium subscription before we get started. To get access to regular extra content in which I teach you vocabulary, grammar and pronunciation, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium to sign up. And if you've got any questions or you want more information, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info. That's a new page on my site that I've just set up with some frequently asked questions and their answers, of course. It would be a bit pointless if it was just the questions. Obviously, I've provided you with the answers too. So if you've got, you know, if you're thinking about Luke's English Podcast Premium, but you need to know certain things, check out my website. In the premium part of the menu, you'll see it says premium info and frequently asked questions. Click that and you can get some more information. Okay, right then, let's get started with episode 666, part one. And here we go. You're listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk. So this is episode 666. Woo. And the plan is to talk about all things evil, satanic, demonic, wicked, unholy, malevolent, hellish, and scary, focusing on pop culture, music and films, and a few anecdotes and rambles. This is part one, and first of all, we deal with the significance of the number 666, and then we move on to talk about the musical side of things with a bit of a musical history lesson, and then also some stuff about heavy metal and scary music, including Black Sabbath, that band from Birmingham, and some other things. Now, just in case you don't know, the number 666 is associated with the devil, Satan, Lucifer, and generally frightening things like that. So before we begin, here is a disclaimer of sorts. I know that some people are very superstitious out there, and just talking about this subject will probably make some people a bit uneasy or uncomfortable. Some people take this sort of thing quite seriously. But don't worry, we don't believe in numerology, the occult, or Satanism. I say we because I'm joined by James in this episode, who's actually there. Hello, James.
Yeah, I'm here. Hello.
We don't believe in Satanism and stuff, do we?
Well, I think it does exist. I'm not personally a subscriber to that philosophy, but no, I don't believe in sort of the dark arts.
Okay. That much.
I don't really. We're treating this as a bit of fun, and we don't personally believe. Well, I don't personally believe in. I don't think I do anyway. This old school sort of God and Satan.
Also, another thing is, some of you out there might suffer from hexacosioi hexaconta hexaphobia, which is the fear of the number 666. Did you know that? Yes, there is a phobia of this number. In the same way that some people have claustrophobia, which is like the fear of enclosed spaces, or arachnophobia, the fear of spiders, or glossophobia, the fear of public speaking, there are people out there who have, let me say that word again, hexacosioi hexaconta hexaphobia. Not one of the words that everyone knows. So if you are one of those people, and if you're very superstitious about this stuff, or if you're of a particularly sensitive nature, then this might not be for you. Also, you should know that during this episode, we'll be playing some extracts of fairly loud and scary music sometimes. And also, you'll hear some clips from scary horror films, including weird and creepy background noises, maybe some screaming, maybe the sound of a chainsaw, you know, stuff like that. So if you're listening on headphones or something and you hear some scary noises, those scary noises will probably be coming from the podcast rather than from the world around you. you're probably not being chased by a chainsaw-wielding maniac. It might be worth having a little look just to make sure, but don't panic too much if you hear weird noises. We're not going to do it sort of randomly. We'll, you know, it'll all be part of the episode. But anyway, there'll be some scary, weird noises. Just bear that in mind. And I hope it doesn't give you a shock or freak you out too much. Okay, I feel I should say that stuff before we start, just to give you, just give some of you a little warning. So my companion, as you know already in this episode, is my brother James, naturally. He is the scariest person I could think of to invite onto episode 666. Ha ha ha.
And also, we don't want to, we've already said we don't want to offend anyone, and we do respect, you know, if you have these beliefs, and you know, it's, everyone's got a different take on this stuff, but we're just trying to keep it light.
That's right. And listeners, ages ago, James claimed episode 666, James, didn't you? You bagsied it.
Well, you mentioned, oh, I've got episode 666 coming up, and I said, yeah, I'll be on that one. So it was kind of like that.
Yeah. Also, listeners have been asking me about this since they realized that I would make it to 666 episodes. I've been getting messages every now and then. Typically, comments from listeners are like this. They say stuff like this. Luke, episode 666 is coming up. I hope you're planning to do something special for it, like maybe an episode on heavy metal or horror films or something. Well, that is exactly the plan. So here we are, episode 666. Right then, now, where should we begin? Now, I think we should probably start by just saying, what is the significance of the number 666? Why is it associated with evil, scary stuff?
Well, we did some research into this, didn't we? Mm-hmm. And I can't remember the conclusion of, is it written in a note somewhere?
Yeah, this is, I'm supposed to talk about this bit.
Okay.
So the significance of number 666. Yeah, so this number has been giving people the heebie-jeebies for centuries. It's a nice word. Like, oh, 666, oh! That's basically when you get the heebie-jeebies. Oh, I'm a bit scared. Let's just talk about that. So mathematically, apparently, I'm not a mathematician, but I've been reading about it, and I've been using a website called Numberphile, which on Numberphile, it's run by sort of a bunch of mathematical experts. It's associated with the Mathematical Sciences Research Institute and a couple of other associations. So anyway, they know what they're talking about. According to Numberphile, 666 is not a particularly special number mathematically. It's a triangular number, which basically means that when you calculate, if you take a load of numbers in a sequence and add them all up. So if you take numbers 1 to 36 and you add them all up together, then it comes to 666. But there are lots of numbers that work like that, and it's that's a triangle number. Anyway, except for that, which is not particularly, not really a unique thing, lots of numbers have that, 666 is not particularly special from a mathematical point of view. There are kind of all of those numerologists out there who like to kind of find significance in numbers, but I don't really believe, I'm sort of skeptical about all that numerology stuff. So anyway, from a mathematical point of view, it's not really that significant. But why is it associated with the devil? Well, it's in the Bible. That's the thing. It's in the New Testament of the Bible, Revelation, the final part of the New Testament, chapter 13, verses 15 to 18. Would you like me to quote that section to you?
Yes, please. Can you do it in the Samuel Jackson voice, please?
The path of the righteous man. No, I can't. So it goes like this. So this is Revelation chapter 13. Here is wisdom. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, for it is the number of a man, and his number is 666. All right. Let him that hath understanding, meaning let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, which I think actually means, it's not just me who thinks this, but lots of people, this actually means work this out. Like, if you're able to understand it, can you work out this clue, this riddle?
Let him that hath understanding, as in, if you want to understand something, work this out.
Exactly. The word is translated into English as count. Let him that hath understanding count the number of the beast, but it could be reckon the number or work out the number.
Yeah, or just observe the number of the beast.
Well, it's actually work it out. It's presented as a riddle, as a code. Okay. All right? And so the number is 666. Now, the Bible was originally written in ancient Greek and some things in Hebrew as well. And in both those languages, numbers are written as letters, a bit like Roman numerals. You know, the way, for example, let's say 6 would be VI in Roman numerals.
Like at the end of films where they have all the Latin, the Roman numerals for the film release date.
Exactly. So Greek and Hebrew, ancient Greek and Hebrew also express numbers in the form of letters. So it's actually possible to take someone's name and make it into a number. So if, let's say, the number 666 would be written using letters, and if you decode it that way into ancient Greek, and I think it's Hebrew that they used for that particular part. If you decode it, it spells out, basically it spells out Caesar Nero. Okay.
Interesting. So he was an emperor.
That's right.
And he was the bad guy. It was a bit of dissent, a bit of local dissent. Mm-hmm. This passage.
Exactly.
Right. So it was kind of like a secret way of saying this guy is the baddie.
Yeah.
And it's a kind of a secret little riddle to solve. It's quite interesting, isn't it?
It's kind of like a political message saying, look, the real bad guy, our enemy, is in fact Caesar Nero. So, you know, but you can't write into your religious book at the time. You can't make it explicit. Look, everyone, the bad guy is the Emperor Nero. You can't say that explicitly because you'll get into lots of trouble, obviously. So instead, they've written it as a sort of a code saying, look, guys, can you work this out? The real bad guy in this story is Emperor Nero.
It's the beast.
That's right. So it's not actually referring to the devil. It's just saying...
to translations kind of mistranslated that and thought the beast, they didn't understand that reference. And they thought, well, this must be the number of the devil.
Exactly. Because Nero as a leader, was opposed to Christianity. And so this was more of a political message there.
It's interesting. So it's another one of these myths that we think we know what they mean. We think we know what 666 means, and it's the number of the devil, and it's in the Bible. And then you do a bit of research, and that's completely untrue.
Right. But the myth really has stayed with us. And now 666, there's nothing you can do about it. Even if you try to debunk it like this, 666 is the devil, and that's what it represents. And you see it in so much stuff, right? Everywhere. I mean, that's why people have been asking me to do something special for episode 666, because it's associated with that. But also, I mean, it's in pop culture, isn't it? You get it in music, you get it in lots of different things. Especially 666 is sort of, people have it tattooed on their arm and stuff because they're heavy metal fans.
There's a Iron Maiden album called The Number of the Beast, isn't there?
Yeah, there is.
We have to confess something. Neither of us are Iron Maiden fans.
Yeah, we have to confess that neither of us actually are Iron Maiden fans. They're a British band, but well, why not, James? Why aren't we fans of Iron Maiden?
Personally, they're too operatic for my tastes. I don't like all that. Run to the hills. It's just silly. Sorry, I know I've lost a few friends there. But
yeah,
Black Sabbath and is fantastic, but I don't like all that operatic, over the top, everything, Spinal Tap stuff.
Yeah, yes, that's right. I'm sure that a lot of people who requested episode 666 are huge Iron Maiden fans, and Iron Maiden do have very loyal, passionate fans, don't they? But yeah, it's not so much our cup of tea. I mean, you know, I'm not saying it's terrible. It's just not really the sort of thing that we like. But yeah, Black Sabbath, on the other hand,
they definitely did flirt with satanic imagery.
Yeah.
They claim now, I mean, are we going to just go into this now or are we going to cover this later? But they claim now that it was mainly the record company's idea. But I know that Geezer Butler, the bass player did have a basement painted black, covered in inverted crosses. So they like to say now, but I think they actually changed their minds about all that dark side stuff, and they started to wear the cross the right way up because they started to get a bit scared. And in fact, one of their dads, I think it was Ozzy's dad, made them all these little steel crosses for them to wear all the time, and they've all got these matching steel crosses in a lot of photos. And in fact, one of the tracks is the sound of that steel cross bouncing off Tony Iommi's strings.
Oh yeah.
And I think they put that on there as like a good luck talisman. It's just one of the fillers on one of the albums. I can't remember which one it's called. It's just a kind of twanging noise. Well, it's the noise is cross hitting the strings of his guitar.
Okay, let's talk then about music. I mean, I was going to say that you know, there are sort of devil is a trope that appears in lots of things.
Let's do that. It is true. Heavy metal uses lots of sort of devilish imagery. You've written here skateboarding, rap music. That's true. I mean, there's lots of scary rap music. Not necessarily satanic, but definitely horror film inspired. And I think we were talking about this before. A lot of films have this devilish bad guy. Star Wars, Darth Vader, the Emperor, Lord of the Rings, Sauron. And it's a very common trope. The one guy who represents pure evil. And it's a kind of binary idea of morality, isn't it?
Mm.
The idea that there's pure evil and pure good. You know, in fairy tales, you have the good guys and the pure evil represented in one figure.
Certainly in films love to have that kind of basic binary opposition where you've got the person who represents all the good things, the good guy, and then you've got the bad guy. And of course, the bad guy ends up being a sort of an evil devil figure, ultimately.
Yeah, very common, you know, figure in pop culture.
But if we just talk about music then, right, and we talk about heavy metal music, we were just talking about Black Sabbath there, that heavy metal band from Birmingham that kind of became famous at the end of the 60s, beginning of the 70s, hugely popular group, Ozzy Osbourne, the lead singer. They were, well, the name Black Sabbath already, meaning sort of Black Sunday, and all of the imagery that they were associated with, like inverted crosses, lots of sort of satanic imagery. They maybe were the first or one of the first bands to do that, but it sort of created a whole genre of music, heavy metal, which is full of satanic imagery and people doing, you know, doing that gesture with their hands, which looks like horns, you know, devil horns. And so, you know, what's all that about then? What's all that devil imagery in heavy metal music?
I think it came from, I mean, Black Sabbath were originally a kind of heavy blues band called Earth. And our uncle actually saw Earth live. He didn't really rate them very much. But they were quite into horror films themselves. And again, I think it was Geezer, the bass player, a friend of his at school had said, we've got a clip about this. Should we just play the clip?
Yeah, go on.
I think it's a really good little clip. And it explains how their interest in horror films and generally the dark side, because this was kind of coming out of the hippie movement. You know, this hippie movement had sort of failed. By 1969, it had kind of been clear that the sort of idealism of 67 and so on wasn't going to sort of last out. And that there was still, I mean, especially if you're stuck in Aston in Birmingham, there's not a lot of peace and love going around. And it was a kind of like, it was a kind of reaction against the hippie wussy stuff, you know, the very happy-go-lucky kind of 60s vibe when it wasn't really reflecting what they were going through. And they combined that with their love of heavy metal. And in fact, let's just play the clip.
Okay, so which clip is it? The first one, Black Sabbath Name.
Black Sabbath Name.
Okay, so we're going to hear Geezer Butler, the bass player.
I believe it could be a few of them. Bill Ward. I think Bill Ward is in this one, who's the drummer.
Okay, but they're basically talking about how they chose the name Black Sabbath and stuff. Okay, here we go. This is a clip from...
This is from a documentary called Heavy Metal Britannia, from the BBC, which is on YouTube if you want to illegally watch it. And it's a very good documentary. So let's play it.
Okay.
Do you believe in ghosts?
The name came from the Boris Karloff movie Black Sabbath.
Starring the incomparable Boris Karloff.
Terry had brought that to us. And we all thought it was great because he sounded scary, you know.
Yeah, my brother went to see it when he was about 16. He was all, and I was too young to go and see it, so he was always telling me about this film, Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath.
I always loved that name, Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath.
And it stuck with me, and I always wanted, always said if I was in a band, that's what I'd call the band, Black Sabbath.
Black Sabbath.
Well, Geezer and myself used to go to the cinema a lot and go and see a lot of horror films. We used to like that in them days, you know. The old Boris Karloff ones and Christopher Lee and all that.
Empire.
Used to like that. We used to go to the midnight viewing and all that business.
An adventure into black magic that goes beyond the boundaries of the supernatural.
Black Sabbath now began writing original material that reflected their fascination with and fear of the dark side.
I am hungry.
I played this riff and we thought, oh, I really like this. It gave you a sort of a vibe, you know, that, oh, I really like what this, we're doing here. So then it had to be lyrics that sort of went with that, the image of that riff.
One night I woke up and there was this black shape just staring at me at the bottom of the bed. And, you know, I was frightened the bloody life out of me. And I leapt out of the bed and went hid in the bathroom until I felt okay, and then I came back to bed. And the next day I told Ozzy about it. And I think that inspired him when he did, you know, came out with the lyrics, "What is this that stands before me? Big black shape," and all that kind of thing.
This is Black Sabbath.
What is this that stands before me?
When I was saying, "What is this that stands before me?" I was completely there. I was completely there, and if we'd have stopped and never written another song again, that would have been enough. We were very innocent. We weren't smart. We weren't contrived. It just came out in a completely natural way at about 9 a.m. in the morning at the Aston Community Centre, right in the centre of Aston, Birmingham.
Everybody was in the world was all on about all the good things that's happening, and it was all flower power and everything's all jolly. And then on the other side of it, there's nobody was talking about the things that happened that's... You know, people getting blown up and just the other side of, you got the good and the evil. Nobody was talking about the evil, so it just seemed a ideal thing to talk about, really.
Peace and love was not necessarily our reality. You know, we came from Aston, which is a pretty rough and tough area in Birmingham. And there wasn't a whole lot of flowers being handed out in Aston. You know, there's a few boots and a kick in the head every once in a while, and a few razor cuts. It was a tough town.
Okay.
How good is that?
Yeah, it's really good. It sounds like a fantastic documentary.
Still sends chills up my spine, to be honest. That whole, what is this that stands before me?
I think this is a good moment to actually talk about some music theory and stuff. Because that track, so I've actually, this is going to sound terrible because I've got an acoustic guitar, a Spanish style acoustic guitar, which is, but that interval. Now we're going to get more detail on this in a moment. Sorry?
Goes up first. Doom, ding, doom.
Yeah, but this is the interval, which is the diminished fifth or the augmented fourth, right? Now you're talking to your friend Kate about this on the podcast in a moment, aren't you?
Yeah, but I interviewed my friend Kate, who's a expert on medieval music and music history in general, and a very talented musician herself. And we thought she'd be the ideal person to talk about the diminished fifth or the devil's interval.
Yeah, because the Black Sabbath riff there's down, and I can't play it. Right, and also Ozzy is going.
Let's play this clip with Kate.
So that though is the devil's interval. Should we just go straight to Kate, or should we hear Bill Bailey talking about his doorbell first? I'd like to do Bill Bailey first.
All right, you're the boss.
Just because he mentions the devil's interval, and he also mentions the Council of Trent. When apparently the devil's interval was banned by the Catholic Church, which is another myth, I think.
More about this in a second, so let's hold on. Let's hear Bill Bailey.
Okay, so this is Bill Bailey, who's a British comedian, very funny. He does lots of music in his comedy. And here he's talking about his doorbell. Ding dong, you know, when someone's at your door. And Bill's actually talking about home security. And he's chosen not to have a big security system in his home. Instead, he's chosen to have a psychological doorbell. And so the idea is that the psychological doorbell just deters unwanted visitors. So if someone comes to the house and you don't want them to, you know, come round, they will ring the doorbell and it will make them scared and then they'll go away. That's the basic idea. But let's listen to Bill talking about his psychological doorbell and the devil's interval. Here we go.
I'm not going in for the big security thing like that. I've just got a psychological doorbell to deter unwanted callers, right? Because most doorbells are quite friendly, aren't they? That's quite friendly, isn't it? And this one's quite friendly.
Quite friendly, he's saying. He sort of eats the word a little bit. Most doorbells are quite friendly. Like, that one's quite friendly, isn't it?
Yeah. Quite friendly, aren't they? That's quite friendly, isn't it? And this one's quite friendly. Although not if you've got an abduction complex. And so what I've done, I use a chord. It's actually an interval. I don't know if you're down with musical terms. An interval, so people go, oh, brilliant, and they're off, you know. No. An interval is a gap between two notes, like this. That's called a perfect fourth, all right? I mean, it's just a musical term. It's not perfect. It's all right. There's a perfect fifth. That's what it's like, you know. That's used a lot in Gregorian chant, you know. Ah. Quite mysterious. Wouldn't work with soap opera themes. Wouldn't work with Coronation Street. Sounds like a biblical epic, doesn't it? And lo, the Battersbys did smite the Tilsleys. Spooked them. Oh, yeah. No. So the chord that I've gone for is actually an interval that was banned in 1545 at the Council of Trent, which was a religious conference. And they deemed that music had become too earthbound, too sexual, and it had to become more reverential and in praise of God. And one chord in particular was banned. This was called the devil's interval. It's the augmented fourth or the diminished fifth, depending on your outlook on life. If you're optimistic, yeah. This is it. I am inflamed with sexual lust. And that is highly effective as a doorbell, see?
he's miming someone pressing the doorbell and then getting scared and sort of jumping away.
Step away, Obadiah. The devil dwells within. That's actually the Pope's doorbell.
That's the Pope's doorbell. Okay, so, James, shall we then listen to Kate, your friend Kate? Do you need to do a little introduction to this?
I already did an introduction, so it should be all there. Do you want me to just play it through now?
Yeah, why not?
Kate, how do I start this?
This is basically it.
I don't know. What are we meant to be talking about? Tritones.
But I'm going to start. I've got an intro written out. Okay, this is James for Luke's English Podcast, and I'm here with Kate Arnold. Kate and I go back a long way, since about 1991. Would you say, Kate?
Yeah, it is probably 91, yeah.
We used to hang out in the same corner of the kind of common room at sixth form.
The kind of common room. Yeah.
Okay. Well, what was it called? It was I don't know what it was.
It was the common room.
It was the common room. Okay. I'm sure we walked to the bus stop together sometimes. We certainly used to drink together in Aston.
Oh, yeah.
We were in various bands at the same time.
Yeah.
You could mention or not mention.
They were great bands.
Great bands. Kate is a very talented musician. A multi-instrumentalist and a singer and a songwriter, playing instruments like the violin and the dulcimer, along with lute pedals sometimes. She performs solo and also with Fear of the Forest, which is a kind of medieval pop group. We've asked Kate to come on today is because she's got a strong interest in and knowledge of music, history, and both of those two things combined, and medieval history. Which brings us on to, first of all, hello, Kate.
Hello.
We've already sort of caught up, but how are you?
I'm all right, thanks. Yeah, it's all a little bit weird as we do this interview because we're both in lockdown. I'm doing all right.
It is very
a chance to catch up on some music, so that's good.
That's good. And you're still teaching music on Zoom, I understand?
I'm doing my best, yeah. You kind of have to get your head around a whole new way of working, really. It's quite different from actually being in the same room with your student, obviously. You've got to kind of think of a whole new way of doing the lesson, really. But it's amazing how much progress some students can make just with, with a video lesson. So, yeah, it's not too bad. It's better than nothing.
You're on your own as well, like me, aren't you?
Yeah.
This way.
Yeah. My house is full of taxidermy and old portraits of people I don't know. So it is... Sometimes I wander the battlements at night talking to the gargoyles. You think I'm joking?
That's good timing. So that brings us on to the Devil's Interval.
Diablos in Musica. Yes.
What is the Devil's Interval?
The Devil's Interval is the tritone.
Okay.
Or the augmented fourth or diminished fifth, which is the interval between two notes of the scale. Now, it's probably easier if I play them at you, I think, if I can, instead of trying to describe it. I don't have a piano, but I do have the dulcimer in the room with me, so we'll just see if the mic can pick it up. Hang on.
Fantastic.
Okay, so can you hear me?
I can hear you.
All right, so here's your tritone.
Okay.
Okay, so that's your nice kind of crunchy. If I play those two notes together, it's a bit kind of discordant and unharmonious, isn't it?
Yeah.
Now, that's your diminished fifth. If I play you a perfect fifth, just to compare it with, you get this. Play them together. And that's the basis of all Western harmony, basically. That gives you your instant kind of medieval harmony sound. That's all your parallel fifths. But if you drop down one semitone from that fifth, you get that nasty, crunchy sound.
Yeah.
So hopefully that's made it clear. Or at least you get an idea of what it actually sounds like.
Thank you.
And people who have heard Purple Haze by Jimi Hendrix will recognise that interval, because it happens quite famously in that, and Black Sabbath as well. A lot of romantic and modern composers from the sort of, I suppose, late 19th to early 20th century used it in a lot of their music. There was Debussy, Berlioz, Britten, Bernstein used it in West Side Story, even Holst. So
Mars.
It's been used a lot. How's it got this reputation for being this Diabolos in Musica, the devil's interval, I suppose?
Come from?
Well, I did actually do a bit of extra research before this interview, because I thought I knew as well, but it turns out that I didn't. The first known evidence of that phrase, as related to that interval that we've just heard, is from 1702. So not medieval at all, the origin of that particular phrase. Diabolos in Musica just means the devil in music.
Okay.
And it's become associated with the tritone, but in fact, even in 1702, that term was used for any dissonant interval in music, not just the tritone. So anything that sounded unharmonious, they would call it Diabolos in Musica. They'd call it the devil in music. But you kind of get the impression that they mean devil just in the sense of a minor inconvenience, a bit like we would say the devil's in the detail.
Yeah. You know? It's not literally evil, the way they're describing it.
No, no. And if you go back further, I know you've got to go to, there's the Council of Trent in 1545. And I think this is where some people get the idea that this is some kind of evil interval. There is this myth that the Council of Trent actually banned this interval from being used in music at all.
Right.
But there's no evidence for this at all. What they did ban was anything impure, noisy and clamorous in church music. But it applied only to church music. There's no documentary evidence banning the tritone specifically. It's not even mentioned. So even if it had been mentioned, because the council was all about church music, it would only have applied in church music. There was no wholesale prohibition on the tritone in secular music.
So it sounds very draconian when you first hear about it, but it's actually it's not.
Yeah. Yeah. But this is, it's one of the myths about the medieval church, actually, that they just went around banning everything and everything was heretical. But this is simply not the case. A lot of the time, we tend to sort of think that we know what medieval people believed and how they thought, especially the medieval church. And it has this terrible reputation for being sort of backward and standing in the way of science and all this sort of thing and banning things left, right and centre. But actually, the Renaissance church was much, much worse for that. Mm. I've got a real thing about people sort of using the word medieval to mean backward, because in a lot of ways they were more advanced and forward thinking than we are.
Just for those ignoramuses like me, what years are we talking about when we say medieval?
I would say medieval from about, let's say, 900 or 1000 to, let's say, 1500, absolute latest.
Yeah.
So it covers a long period of time.
Yes.
But yeah, people think they know what it was like in medieval times, and we really, really don't. I mean, going back to the tritone thing, before the Council of Trent, which, as I say, was in 1545, you go back sort of 300-400 years to the first, the guy who's seen as the first Western music theorist, and he was a monk called Guido d'Arezzo, and he wrote the first kind of treatise on Western music theory. And he did argue for the elimination of the tritone from music, but again, nothing to do with the devil. He doesn't mention the devil. He doesn't say anything about it being evil. His argument was on the grounds that it was unharmonious and it didn't have that nice parallel fifths sound that I played earlier on. Yes, he just didn't like the sound. That was all.
Evil or anything. He wasn't being literal like that, we don't think.
No, not at all. Not at all. So this whole sort of myth of it being associated with evil has really come about in the last 100 years or so.
And
since
it's banned as well, because it wasn't actually banned. There was just some guidelines about the church, which they were asked to follow. But it wasn't like a wide-reaching ban.
No, not at all. It's never been banned. It's never been evil. It's only in the last 100 years that people have decided it's going to have this association with the devil. And that is mainly in 19th century romantic composers, modern composers, and rock and metal.
Yeah.
And that's that's really it.
Okay.
I hope some of that made some sense.
A lot of sense. And we've busted some myths.
Good. I always like busting medieval myths.
So you've got some new music out, haven't you?
Yes, I have.
Fortunae I.
Well, it's Rota Fortunae 1.
One, sorry. I thought that was pretty good at Latin. So that's Latin. What does that mean?
It means Wheel of Fortune.
Right.
There will be a follow-up. I'm working on Rota Fortunae 2 at the moment. So hopefully when the lockdown's over, that will be recorded and released.
Beautiful. Well, we're going to play some now, if that's all right with you.
No, please play whatever you like. What track are you going to play?
I thought I was going to play Skeleton Key.
Okay.
Okay, well, thanks very, very much for coming on and talking about The Devil's Interval.
You're welcome. I hope some of it made sense to somebody somewhere.
It's to me. Well, you know, 90%.
90% is good. That's a good proportion.
Too bad, is it? Okay, thank you very, very much. And
thanks for having me.
And we'll check out your music. And cheers, Kate. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
So this is by Kate Arnold, as promised. This is Skeleton Key. This is performed with a dulcimer, I believe a violin, percussive elements and loop pedals, and she does this live as well. So here we go, the Skeleton Key.
Thank you.
That was fantastic. That was really interesting. So I just want to say thanks to Kate for answering our question about the Devil's Interval and lovely music. Yeah, so people can check out some of her stuff. We'll put links on the page for the episode. There'll be a couple of YouTube videos. And if they want to get her music, they can do that. Just go onto the page for the episode. You'll find details of Kate Arnold's music. That was great.
I'd recommend Bandcamp as your music source, because if you buy it from there, the money goes straight to Kate. It's nice to have it on your phone, so you're not streaming all the time.
That would be Bandcamp.
Pay for it on Bandcamp would be my humble suggestion.
Okay, links on the page for the episode. Okay, so anyway, that was about the Devil's Interval, which, the diminished fifth, the augmented fourth, which, yeah, I mean, she mentioned Jimi Hendrix, Purple Haze, and Black Sabbath, down, 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 which we heard before. So let's go back to talking about Black Sabbath again. And
Sabbath.
Good old Black Sabbath. Do you remember the first time you got into Black Sabbath?
Yeah, again, I think this was... Matt Branner Martin, the same guy that gave us that rave tape. I think he actually played me. So he lent me some records back in the day. Back in the day when you didn't have file sharing, you had to lend each other your records and stuff. And he brought in some records for me to borrow. And one of them was that Black Sabbath Greatest Hits album.
You know what? I think this is another case of where I remember your life better than you do.
Well, I remember Matt got me into Black Sabbath, but I may be wrong. Maybe it was you.
No, it was Matt. But this is how I remember it. So you went to university 1993.
No, I think I was into Sabbath before then.
Well, this is what I remember. So I went to visit you in Cambridge when you were at university, and I'd been given a Black Sabbath tape by Matt, because I was hanging around with him because he still lived in Solihull at the time. So I was still hanging around with Matt when you'd gone to university, and he made me a tape of Black Sabbath, and I was listening to it all the way on the bus to visit you in Cambridge and really enjoying it. And then when I saw you, I said, "Hey, listen to this." And you were like, "What's this?" And I said, "Black Sabbath." And you were like, "Black Sabbath." That was your reaction. And then later on, I think the
later on, I invented Black Sabbath and told you all about it. No doubt.
But I remember later on, you borrowed the tape from me. I think it was in the summer holidays, and you were getting into it. And I remember distinctly you saying, "I can't believe I'm getting into Black Sabbath," because this is before you'd kind of
metal was a big no-no for me in those days.
Heavy metal was a no-no. Yeah.
Yeah, because I'd one of my friends at school, his brother had a lot of heavy metal albums, and I really didn't like them. They were like overproduced. It was like stuff like ZZ Top, which I now like, but the later stuff I'm not so into. And it was very glossy, and all the sort of devil-y stuff just seemed really dumb. And I was kind of not interested. It just seemed like a really stupid little... Like Dungeons and Dragons or something, you know. It just didn't seem cool, and the music was overblown and very overproduced in the 80s, and I just didn't like it. So when I found Black Sabbath, it was like, oh, actually, maybe I do like heavy metal, because if this is heavy metal, then I like heavy metal. But it turns out Black Sabbath aren't actually heavy metal. They're heavy rock.
Oh, yeah?
Yep, Black Sabbath don't call themselves heavy metal. I mean, they kind of do now, grudgingly, but... Tony Iommi says he never heard the phrase heavy metal growing up, and he considers what they play to be heavy rock. Because to me, it's grounded in blues.
Right.
Whereas a lot of that later heavy metal has moved away from the blues riff kind of format, and it's just this really over-the-top stuff. And it doesn't have that down and dirty, sort of down-at-heel rock and roll vibe anymore. It just has this kind of flashy, over-the-top, too-fast vibe.
Okay, I see.
But Motorhead and Black Sabbath are both kind of in the heavy rock mold for me, where they're really based in old blues rock, but just heavily amplified. Whereas you wouldn't say Iron Maiden are particularly bluesy, would you? I'm rambling. But I remember, yeah, when I first got into Black Sabbath, what I remember is the album covers as well as the music. That Greatest Hits, which is a terrible pressing, by the way, or NEMS, whatever the hell that label was. But it's got that Bruegel painting on the front of like a sort of Dark Ages horrific Old Testaments kind of...
Oh, yeah.
Very much like people, a lot of people think it's Hieronymus Bosch because it's very similar, but it's actually this guy called Bruegel. And he painted sort of visions of hell. And also the front cover of their first album has this very scary, like, witch standing in a kind of overrun garden of a sort of estate. And that's really scary as well.
Yeah, I remember the Greatest Hits album cover. Yeah, I remember you buying it. And yeah, it's really scary. It's a really scary scene.
I mean, it's not exactly hippie stuff, is it? I mean, the hippies must have been terrified.
Essentially, if I can describe the album cover, it's like a town in the countryside being overrun by skeletons, isn't it? It's like these weird skeleton, it's a skeleton army coming.
There's loads of details of different people being tortured in different ways and like strung up on racks, and like it's really nasty.
It's really scary. Yeah, really scary and so fascinating. It really disturbed me in a very exciting way when I used to stare at that album cover. I used to
go, and it's kind of from the 18th century or something, so you know, or even earlier. I don't know when's it from, 16th century, I don't know, but there is a date on the cover somewhere. But it's just like, oh my god, this is scary.
Yeah, totally, totally scary. And it kind of makes you think of periods in the past when dark stuff must have happened. I mean, not that skeleton armies ever walked the earth, but who knows? But not that skeleton armies exactly walked the earth. But stuff like, you know, things that happened during the days of the bubonic plague, some of the horrific scenes that must have happened, and the witch hunts and things like that. Some horrible stuff has happened in kind of feudal countryside areas in Europe in the past and other places. I mean, yeah, scary stuff. But yeah, that album cover is really, really frightening and horrible, but sort of exciting. So I mean, this thing, you know, basically to try and summarize this kind of Black Sabbath satanic scary image thing, and what you get in heavy metal, it's just sort of a bit of a taboo, and it's exciting, isn't it, really? It kind of gives you a little exciting thrill, and it's scary, and that's the appeal of it. It's rather than it being about genuine devil worship, it's just more naughty, exciting, and the sort of thing your parents wouldn't like.
And they also talk about dark real-life things as well, so sort of like paranoia and, you know, sort of mental illness, almost like going crazy, and other sort of, like, they had some song called War Pigs, which is about, you know, kind of generals and Vietnam War and stuff like that. And they write about the kind of things that most people would never write about, you know. There weren't too many, I mean, nowadays it's kind of common to talk about anything, but I think in the late 60s to start talking about, and not even in a protest song kind of way, more in a sort of resigned, we're all going to hell sort of way. And it's not like there were protest songs. They were just like, oh my God, we're fucked.
War Pigs is maybe my favorite. Just the number of riffs in that track. Tony Iommi, the guitarist, is just on fire in that track. Just all these different riffs. Every single part of the song is a riff that you could build an entire song on top of. And there's like one amazing riff which he repeats a few times, and then another amazing riff. It's actually really melodic. His guitar playing is extremely melodic, which is kind of because he was so influenced by the Shadows, and the Shadows were essentially like melodic guitar instrumental music, but they took that and made it really loud and really scary.
It does seem quite spooky the way it all came together for them as well, because they claim that once they got started with that name, everything just started falling into place. And Tony describes the riffs as just, he couldn't write a bad riff for years, and he said he didn't know where they came from. He wasn't writing them like a year before, but then he hit this period where he was just, every practice they were coming up with the most killer riffs, and the band themselves were like fans of each other. You can see it on stage. They're really buzzing off each other. you know, and they were really a special thing that happened. It wouldn't have happened with any other combination of musicians. It wouldn't have happened at any other time. They weren't aiming for something. It just sort of organically happened. It seems like it was quite a spooky time generally.
I suppose in creating music and stuff, sometimes I guess like creativity comes out of things like confidence and finding a new area. And so because they sort of went for this, let's do scary horror music, that was suddenly a new area and all this new creative ground opened up for them. And that then gave them confidence because they felt that it was working. And the confidence when you're being creative in music is really, really healthy because it just allows it to, you're not blocked, you know, by your ideas don't get blocked anymore.
And it does. We should also talk about another reason they sound the way they sound is because Tony Iommi had an accident at work, an industrial accident in which he lost his fingertips on his left hand. A machine came, he worked in a factory, a very sort of, you know, sort of heavy machinery factory. It's another thing about heavy metal, that there's this theory that the reason it came from Birmingham and the reason Birmingham is the home of heavy metal is because it's the home of industry in Britain, and they were surrounded by factories and forges and literally metal everywhere, you know, like drop forges, industrial sounds going all the time. It was just in the air, literally in the air. Anyway, so Tony went to work one day and he was filling in for someone else and he didn't know how to operate the machine properly. It came down and took the tips of his fingertips off, and he said he took his hand away and his fingertips just kind of pulled away. And this was before the days of, you know, industrial tribunals and stuff. I mean, I think he'd have a pretty strong case these days. But he was just like off work. I don't know if he was being paid or whatever, but his old boss came around to see him. And he was really depressed, Tony. You know, he thought he was never going to be able to play guitar again. And his boss brought round a record by Django Reinhardt, who also lost some fingers and had learned how to play his own way. And Tony took, you know, strength from this and thought, well, if he can do it, I can do it. And he actually made himself fingertips out of washing up liquid bottle caps, melted them down into little thimbles. A thimble is something that sits on the end of your finger when you're sewing, and added little leather patches to them for extra feel. And then he found he could actually play when he used very light strings, because he couldn't actually feel where his fingers were going. So he had to use touch very sensitively. So he used very light strings, and he learned he could play with these thimbles on his fingers. And he still uses them to this day. And that's partly why they sound so heavy and why the notes bent so much, is because he was using light gauge strings. And surprisingly, lighter gauge gives a heavier sound, because it just does, because you can bend them more. They're more malleable. They're not so rigid. So that's another weird, strange aspect of Black Sabbath. Like, if he hadn't had that accident, would it have, you know, maybe that added a bit of darkness into his playing, you know?
Yeah, it's really, really interesting. That's brilliant. Have you ever met Tony Iommi? Because Matt, it's kind of a famous story that I've repeated again and again on this podcast, of the thing about what should you do when you meet a famous person, and you're supposed to do the thing that Matt did when he met Tony Iommi in WH Smith in Mel Square in Solihull. And he went up to him and said, "Excuse me, are you Tony Iommi from Black Sabbath?" And Tony was like, "Yeah, I am." And Matt just went, "Nice one," and then left him alone, you know. Like, he gave him the thumbs up, "Nice one," and then left him alone. And I, to this day, I swear that I, by coincidence, was there. Do you know this? I mean, you won't believe it, because you don't believe it when I say things like this. Yeah, because I remember being in WH Smith before I knew Matt or anything like that. I would have been about, I don't know, 13 or something, in WH Smith, standing at the magazine rack, looking at a computer game magazine or something, and I overheard the guy next to me, this happened next to me, someone go up to a guy and say, "Are you blah, blah, blah?" And the guy going, "Yes, I am." Right? So I definitely overheard that happening. And then
you used to spend most of your life in the video game section of WH Smith.
I used to enjoy reading all the magazines about computer games. So that definitely happened. Standing there, "Excuse me, are you blah, 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 blah?" "Yeah, I am." "Oh, nice one." You know, I definitely heard that happening. It might not have been Matt and Tony Iommi, but then Matt said, "Yeah, I met Tony Iommi once at the magazine rack in WH Smith in Solihull." And I put two and two together and thought, I think I was there. I think I was standing next to both of you when that happened without even knowing you. It's possible.
Very, very bizarre. Of course, don't assume I'm being sceptical here. I'm not.
Okay. But have you actually met Tony Iommi? Because he used to live in the area where we used to live.
Well, it was our local pub for a bit, and then it changed hands, and we didn't used to sort of drink there so much. But apparently after it kind of got done up and it was quite posh, Tony Iommi used to drink in our local pub for a while.
Yeah, I think my parents bumped into him.
Yeah, I've never met him. No, I did see Black Sabbath live on, I think it was their last tour.
Mm-hmm. Can you tell me about it?
It was in 2013, I think. I did look this up, but it was weeks ago when I did this prep. And it was the tour with Faith No More and Motorhead.
Mm-hmm.
And it was really, really good. It was excellent. And there was lots of funny things happened. I mean, lots of Motorhead and metal fans drink huge amounts of alcohol. And there was quite a few people that I saw that had obviously been drinking since they woke up on the coaches down from fucking Leeds or wherever. And wherever metal fans come from. And loads of them were like passed out by like early afternoon. Like you'd go around the bar and there'd be people just like unconscious on the floor. And you're like, did you enjoy Black Sabbath, mate? Did you? Yeah, was it a good gig? You know, enjoy that 50 quid ticket that you just spent lying on in a pool of your own vomit. Well, I don't mind drinking excessively, but if you're going to miss the bands, come on.
Yeah,
it's anyway, that's funny. But Black Sabbath was superb. I mean, I was miles away. I could just see them as like little figures, you know, on stage, but you're kind of looking at the screen most of the time. But they were superb. I mean, it wasn't the original drummer. I think Bill Ward can't hack it anymore, the touring life, because he's a sort of recovering alcoholic. But their fill-in drummer isn't quite as good. But apart from that, it was superb. Like hit after hit after hit. You know, you think, oh, they've played all the hits now. I wonder what's next. Oh, fuck, I forgot about this one. And oh, it was superb. Really, really good.
Yeah. How's Ozzy doing these days? Do we know?
I'm not too sure. I'm not too sure. He's alive.
Yeah, that's the main thing. Because either he's alive and sober, or he's alive and still struggling with his demons. I don't know. But Ozzy's an incredible person, really. Hello, listeners. James now mentions a video documentary about Ozzy Osbourne. The video documentary is called God Bless Ozzy Osbourne.
It's made by his son, Jack Osbourne. So he has access to all sorts of footage that we've never seen before. So there's loads of great footage of the sort of lost years, you know, in the 80s, where he's just completely lost, you know, just not out to lunch.
Out of his head.
I think one of the best bits is when Jack gets him to sit down and watch some of his old videos from the 80s. And a lot of them, it's like he's never seen them before. Like he has no memory of being there, no memory of seeing them before. And he gets pissed off. He's like, fucking, I'm not listening to this shit.
Wait a minute. And so his son gets Ozzy to sit down and watch some of his old music videos.
Yeah, his old solo videos, like the Ozzy Osbourne solo stuff. And just Ozzy just doesn't remember any of it. And he doesn't remember the videos even existing. He doesn't remember filming them. And he hates seeing himself, you know, looking like a twat in the 80s.
Yeah.
I hated this video. It's so fucking lame. Oh, I don't like it. Fucking stupid. Everybody was fucked up and drunk and everything. So next, come on. It's a cliche fucking 80s video, that is. I guess I'm just another fool. I can't remember doing this fucking thing. I was a mess in there. I was doing fucking morphine, Vicodin, fucking booze, all kinds of shit. But I can't remember. I just cannot remember it at all. Never happened. Next! Whose idea was it? How the fuck do I know? It's just boring to me. It's fucking hard to go back there, you know. A lot of it, I don't want to go back there, you know. Walk around and fucking watch your shit.
Yeah.
That's a good documentary.
Okay, must check it out. Should we talk more about the music stuff? Because you also wanted to name check some other scary music.
I mean, this is Matt again, yet again, and Eggy gave us, or gave me, this tape, which I'm not going to tell you what it's called because it's extremely disgusting. It's full of really heavy death metal that we kind of all kind of started to get into, kind of half as a joke, but kind of half really into it. And we've got some examples, haven't we? Should we play some?
Yeah, okay. So let me just bring up the little the folder of audio files I've got here. So what do you want to play then?
I don't really like most metal, but I do quite like some of this really crazy, mad stuff. Let's try Deicide, Sacrificial Suicide.
Okay, this is... Are you ready, folks? You're going to hear some death metal now. So Deicide, they're a death metal band, and they're American. Formed in 1987 by the drummer, Steve Asheim. Anyway,
and Deicide means death of God or something, doesn't it?
Deicide means to kill God?
Yeah.
Yeah, like the way you've got homicide is killing man, deicide is killing God.
Deicide is known for their lyrics, which cover topics such as Satanism, anti-Christianity, and blasphemy.
Blasphemy, blast for you, blast for everybody in the room. That's an Eddie Izzard thing. So you want to talk about the controversies, the various controversies associated with the band Deicide and how ridiculous they are. So this is ridiculous death metal from America from the late 80s, but it's kind of quite enjoyable, even though it's ridiculous. Here we go. Okay.
Fucking awesome.
The thing about that is that we're both drummers, right? And the drumming in death metal is incredible. They use double bass pedals, so it's like both their feet are playing the bass drum, and that incredible skill. I mean, they're so talented.
Yeah, it's really technical, isn't it? The drumming.
Yeah, it's incredible. I mean,
without the drummer, they wouldn't stand a chance. You need such a good drummer to be in a band like that.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I think you also, the other one I remember, because I used to listen to this tape that Matt did, was Obituary, The End Complete.
Should we talk about Deicide first?
Okay.
Very brief.
Go on then, go ahead.
Okay, so there's some controversy about Deicide. He claimed in the early 90s that he would commit suicide at the age of 33 to mirror a lifespan opposite that of Jesus Christ. However, he passed that age in 2000 and did not commit suicide.
when he, in his 20s, he was like, I'm going to commit suicide when I'm 33 because that's when Jesus died. And then it turns out, how old are you now? Oh, I'm 35. Oh, he didn't then. Good.
Yeah, very, very irresponsible, I'd say. During an interview with NME magazine, he shot and killed a squirrel with a pellet gun to prevent any further damage to his electrical system in the attic of the location where the interview was held.
What? What? He shot a squirrel during an interview with a little gun because the okay, you're very evil.
But funnily enough, someone left a bomb on stage at one of their gigs, and it went off. No one was harmed, but it was blamed on animal rights activists who were angered at their side's lyrical themes of animal sacrifice,
and probably the squirrel that he shot.
I always think it's funny when you see these really heavy metal bands and then you see the little Sony logo in the bottom or EMI or whatever, and you just think, how?
Yeah, they're in it for the money, aren't they, really?
I don't know. It's entertainment, I suppose.
Yeah, it is. It's like horror movie stuff, really.
It's a bit weird when people take it too seriously, though. I mean, there's those Norwegian black metal guys, which we're not going to talk about because I don't really know anything about it. But they burned down churches and there was murders involved. And
yeah,
but people just shouldn't take it too seriously.
Yeah, don't burn down buildings and don't, you know, don't kill people, obviously. I mean, it's, yeah, heavy metal for me is the appeal of it is a bit like the appeal of, yeah, sort of horror films. It's thrilling. It kind of makes you feel more alive when you feel scared, when you have that sense that this is dangerous and naughty and is sinful and goes against like established conventions of morality. That whole atmosphere of that is quite sort of exciting, but
it's
intoxicating. Don't actually do any evil things, though. It's ridiculous. All right, okay. And we could
blast of something else. What was it? What was the other one? Obituary.
I remember this one from Matt's tape. I remember this one was like, whoa, listen to that. Okay, here yeah. It is. This is a band called Obituary. And when somebody dies, like a public figure dies, the piece that is written about them in the newspaper is the obituary. So it's like, you know, just a summary of someone's life in the newspaper after they've died. And that's the name of this band, Obituary. How do you say it?
Obituary.
Obituary. It's one of those words that's sort of difficult to say even in your own language.
Obituary.
Obituary.
You have to say it in a really BBC voice.
Obituary.
Yeah, obituary.
Are they American, this group?
Almost undoubtedly.
Okay, let's have a little listen. Okay, that was Obituary, the end complete. I remember that. That was.
Do you remember we used to do a cover of that in Grandpa Knuckles?
Yeah, we were in a band called Grandpa Knuckles, and that's how we know that song, because we used to do a cover version of that in the band.
God knows how we did that. It's actually quite a simple song, that one.
Except for some of the drumming. Yeah. I mean, there's other bits of music that I think you wanted to just mention briefly, but I think we should move on to talk about some other things.
Let's have a little blast of see what else you've got on that list, because it's worth it. Some of these are brilliant.
Okay. All right, then. Come on.
We can always cut them out. I think we should have a bit of Carcass Incarcerated Solvent Abuse. Now, this one is one of the best riffs, and it sounds like it's been recorded off a tape. You know, it sounds like this has been lost in time somewhere, the original recording of this. Unless it was just terribly recorded in the first place, but it's just superb, this one. Go on,
so the band name is Carcass, which is like the dead body of an animal, like a carcass by the side of the road. If you love animals, then, you know, I don't know, what should I say? Sorry, I love animals too. I really love animals, you know, so I don't know.
Couldn't eat a whole one.
I love animals, but I couldn't eat a whole one. Very funny. Name of the band is Carcass. The title of the song is Incarnated Solvent Abuse. Solvent abuse is when it's like sniffing glue or aerosols, like sort of like a really cheap, dodgy form of drug abuse. But incarnated.
Who knows? It looks good.
Yeah.
Written.
Okay, this is on Incarnated Solvent Abuse by Carcass. Yeah. Now, you know what we should play is a bit of Gustav Holst. Kate mentioned this as one of the composers. Gustav Holst was a British composer, despite the name. It's not a typically English name, Gustav. But Gustav Holst, Gustav Theodor Holst, was an English composer, arranger and teacher, best known for the orchestral suite The Planets. He was around sort of end of the 19th century and the first part of the 20th century. I don't know when The Planets was composed. Let's see. During the beginning of World War One, Gustav Holst wrote The Planets between 1914 and 1916. The Planets is a set of pieces of classical music about the planets. And Mars, this one, is about the bringer of war?
Well, Mars is the god of war, traditionally. So I guess this is a war theme. And it's inspired quite a lot of heavy metal, I believe. Quite a lot of people reference this.
Not just heavy metal. I think it's massively inspired John Williams, the guy who did the music for Star Wars. But the Mars theme has got lots of diminished fifths and augmented fourths in it, as we'll hear, you know, that down, down, down. There's lots of that in this. Here we go. Okay. Anyway, a bit of Gustav Holst there. Come on, what else? You want...
Go down one.
Gravediggers.
I mean, this is a good example of scary hip-hop or scary rap music, which there's quite a lot of, and nearly all of it references horror films. So they may be talking about kind of societal scary shit in some cases, but a lot of the time, like Gravediggers. Gravediggers was a kind of like horror film themed supergroup, rap group, and they've got a very good album called 6 Feet Deep, which is quite scary. So let's have a bit of that.
It's called Nowhere to Run, Gravediggers.
Let's get it on, arch, and watch the spot get blown. I be the sick lunatic where the devil is prone. From the mist of the darkness, I come with this. Hit it straight to the chest like a primacy mist. Best director, yeah, the fanatical type. I'm like a bat in the night when it's time to take flight. Here I am in the flesh, and yes, I love cess. I'm obsessed by the sounds the track possess. Intellectual, killer, special, majestical. Open up the devil's, have them hanging for my testicles. Nowhere to run to, baby. There's nowhere to hide.
Fuck it, another day, another target. From here to Nantucket, MCs keep the bucket. I'm rugged and rough, blowing up till I bust. While other rappers are clatter than a white girl's butt.
Wow.
think that was RZA, and I don't know who the second guy was, but
top,
that's pretty
top draw hip hop.
Yeah, it's one of the best. What else have we got? Holiday in Cambodia. I don't know if we need to play it, but Dead Kennedys are quite scary, and they write songs about kind of societal scary shit like pollution and like chemicals in the water supply and
lawlessness.
A holiday in Cambodia, which nowadays you can go on holiday to Cambodia, but
I have been on holiday in Cambodia.
Yeah, we had a lovely time, but back in the late 70s it was kind of known for sort of horrible war atrocities, and the idea of sending a kind of hippie on holiday for a year gap year in Cambodia back then was a kind of terrifying concept.
Yeah,
so let's have a little bit of that just for the spooky vibes of Dead Kennedys.
Okay. Makes me think of like surf music, but also just full of those dissonant intervals that Kate was talking about, which is interesting that back in the days when the church was really involved in music and making music, and music was all about praising God, and so all the intervals had to be perfect. You know, you get all those perfect fifths and perfect thirds and stuff. Is that a third? I think so. And no, that's a fifth. Perfect fifths, perfect thirds. All the heavy metal music and surf music and stuff is lots of those dissonant intervals, like the like so, and those are dissonant intervals. And it's like modern rock music is full of all that stuff, which is interesting because it's sort of like, you know, new musical ground sort of thing.
Kind of puts you in a weird mood, or kind of puts you on edge.
Yeah, and back in the medieval period or later, that stuff was discouraged just because it wasn't felt to be sort of pure enough.
It's tension, creates tension because you're always waiting for it to resolve in music back to the kind of bass note or back to the harmony. And while that dissonance is there, you're kind of waiting for it to kind of fix itself.
Which creates momentum because you want it to move forwards to resolve and stuff like that. So that's why rock and roll is exciting, because of all those intervals and those things, the unresolved intervals in music.
Right, let's have Aphex Twin. So Aphex Twin makes some lovely ambient music, and he also makes horrible, scary music. There's one called Smudge Face as well, which I haven't listed there, which is just noise, horrible, discordant, you know, electronic noise. But this is kind of big hit, big scary hit. What can you say about this one, Luke?
Well, it's designed to be as scary as possible. He's obviously gone, ha 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 ha, I'm going to make something really scary and really disturbing just because it's funny to me. I think that's kind of what he did.
Yeah.
And he got together with the director. Is it Chris Cunningham?
Yeah, the video is horrible. I don't like those Chris Cunningham videos. I mean, I'm an Aphex Twin fan, but I find the videos a bit much.
I don't like the video. I remember seeing the video, I think, on MTV late at night when I was a student, and I'm just thinking, oh God, that's just really disturbing and horrible. It's like worse than the most scary horror film.
Why are they trying to upset us? Why? What's the reason?
They're just trying to disturb us just for their own amusement.
Let's put Come to Daddy on.
Okay, this is Come to Daddy, and it's like, what is it? I Want Your Soul, from the scary movie Evil Dead 2, which we're going to talk about films and scary experiences after this. Okay, yeah. Anyway, here we go. Come to Daddy by Aphex Twin. I mean, I actually find it funny, really, these days.
Quality stuff, isn't it? Yes. That sounds like a synth being put through a super fuzz pedal to me.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
All right, then. So I wonder if people are still with us. Let's talk about other scary stuff. What should we do? Should we talk about scary stories or scary films?
We could break it up with the stories since we've had a lot of clips being played.
Come on, let's talk about some scary stories. Hello, everyone. This is actually the end of part one, and we'll continue the theme in part two. And as you heard just at the end there, we're going to tell some true stories about frightening things that we've really experienced in our lives. So some anecdotes are coming in part two. I hope you've enjoyed part one and that you're not feeling too disturbed or anything. Just to recap then, in this episode, we talked about the origin of the idea that 666 is the number of the devil and how it turns out that it's not quite as satanic as people think. Then we talked about the devil's interval in music, the augmented fourth or diminished fifth, depending on your outlook on life. Augmented, by the way, means raised. To augment means to increase the value of something or to go up. And diminished is the opposite. To diminish means to make something less. So when you go up one semitone from a fourth, I mean, this is already being explained, repeating myself. But anyway, that's a fourth. That's a fourth. So if you go up one semitone, there you go. That's the augmented fourth. And diminished, meaning going down. So this is a fifth. So if you go down from there, you end up at the same note. So augmented fourth, diminished fifth, same note. Okay, so they're actually exactly the same note, just two ways of describing it. So we talked about that, which is a feature of so-called unholy music. And then we had a good old ramble about Black Sabbath, heavy metal, and other scary forms of music. Some of you probably expected us to talk about some other bands, like, for example, Iron Maiden. And I'm afraid we did have to admit that we're not really super big fans of Iron Maiden, which is kind of why we didn't talk about them. Because, you know, you've got to talk about what you know, haven't you? And also, some of you might have expected us to talk about not just heavy metal or death metal, but black metal or doom metal or goth metal or power metal or thrash metal, any of the other metals, basically. There are various other genres that obviously we didn't cover. So if that's what you were expecting, I do apologize. But, you know, you could jump into the comments section and add a few comments about other scary music that you feel is appropriate for episode 666. Still to come then, we have our scary stories, and then in part three we turn to the topic of scary films. Leave your comments in the comments section if you fancy getting involved. Thanks again to Kate Arnold for her input in this episode. App users, those of you listening to this on the Luke's English Podcast app, you'll find a bit of bonus audio for this episode. And it's Kate talking about more about the Wheel of Fortune, which is the name of her album. Wheel of Fortune is also an image which appeared in a lot of medieval art and culture. That's why she named her album Wheel of Fortune. So if you'd like to hear Kate talking for a couple of minutes about the Wheel of Fortune, then tap the gift icon for this episode in the Luke's English Podcast app. The icon can be found when you're playing this episode. It's next to the share, favorite, and download icons in the app. If you don't have the app, you can get it free from the App Store on your phone. Just search for Luke's English Podcast app. You'll find bonus bits of audio for some of the episodes. If you'd like to hear Kate's music properly without it being faded out by me, then check out the page for this episode on the website, where you will find links to Kate Arnold's album on Bandcamp and also some YouTube videos of her stuff. Also on the page for this episode on the website, you'll see a video from Numberphile explaining in more detail how the number 666 is a code which refers to Emperor Nero rather than the devil, plus some footage of Black Sabbath and the Heavy Metal Britannia documentary that James mentioned, which is well worth a watch. That's it then for part one, and we will speak to you again in part two soon. But for now, it's just time to say goodbye. Bye, 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 bye. Thanks for listening to Luke's English Podcast. For more information, visit teacherluke.co.uk.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
If you enjoyed this episode of Luke's English Podcast, consider signing up for Luke's English Podcast Premium. You'll get regular premium episodes with stories, vocabulary, grammar, and pronunciation teaching from me, and the usual moments of humour and fun. Plus, with your subscription, you will be directly supporting my work and making this whole podcast project possible. For more information about Luke's English Podcast Premium, go to teacherluke.co.uk/premium info.